Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, our attention has never been as overwhelmed as it is today. Many of us recognize that our brains struggle to multitask. Despite this, we feel compelled to do so anyway, while we fill each moment of our lives to the brim with mindless distraction. So studies show that we can work at our computers an average of about 40 seconds before we get distracted or interrupted. Considering we likely do our better work after 40 seconds, wouldn't it be great to learn how to refocus and be able to extend that time to 5 minutes, to 30 minutes, to 90 minutes? Joining us now is productivity expert Chris Bailey. His work has been found all over the place, including the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, TED, Fast Company, and he's the author of a book called The Productivity Project. Now Chris is back with a book called Hyperfocus, How to Be More Productive in a World of Distraction. We're so pleased he could join us on The Mountain Life. Chris Bailey, welcome. Nice to have you.
It's nice to be a part of The Mountain Life, finally. I've been living the Canadian life and not the mountain life. It's nice to be here.
Well, I hear there are mountains in Canada as well.
There are, but on the far other side.
Yeah.
I used to live the mountain life in Canada, but I'm out of that life right now, and I need to get back in.
Well, you know, you're just so busy being productive. And so maybe let's start with your personal story. I mean, this is so great. You are a productivity expert. It's what you do. It's what you've been sort of geeking out on for a long time. And you had this dawning realization that as you were being, well, coaching and teaching other people how to be productive, you found that you were distracted. Gee, what were you distracted by?
Everything, maybe. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, mostly technology things. You know, TV wasn't really, but anything on my phone, anything on my computer. And I really found myself in a state where I was busier, but while accomplishing less. And so I thought, if I have this problem, as somebody who's such a nerd about productivity, maybe other people are facing this too. And I was giving advice about how we should tame distractions up to that point. And so maybe I thought, okay, maybe if this is the advice I'm giving, maybe it's not complete. Maybe there's a bigger picture that I'm missing here as well. So that was really the impetus for this book.
I like that focus on taming the distractions, Chris, because I have this conversation with a lot of people, and it seems to be a circular conversation that is really hard to get out of, which is, you know, tame the distractions. We have so many distractions, and it's contributing to a fracturing of society and pressures that we didn't exist, and it amplifies outrage and anger and distraction.
Yeah.
It amplifies, you know, distraction. But you have shifted away from that, and I take it you have said we have to recognize the reality of what is, which is we are going to have amplified distractions. What do we do with that?
Well, this is the state of our attention. We live in a world that's full of pleasures, it's full of threats, and it's full of novel things that we can focus on. In fact, our evolution wires us to pay attention to anything that's one of those three things. We evolved to pay attention to pleasures. We evolved to pay attention to threats. We evolved to focus on what's novel. And we even have a mechanism in our mind where we release dopamine for every novel thing we focus on. And so it reinforces these mechanisms, which served us well in our evolution. But today, like you said, when we're surrounded by so many novel things, it's difficult, especially in these echo chambers where, you know, people aren't really living the mountain life in these echo chambers. They're kind of, you know, bouncing between different things. But a big thing that I settled on, and I think something that kind of took a lot of weight off of my shoulders, is that we're distracted an awful lot. But at the same time, this distraction isn't our fault. And I hope if somebody takes something away from this interview, it's that, where our minds are wired to pay attention to these things. And so we have to internalize that idea. And use that reason why we should tame these, because we can't resist them, as a motivator to maybe shut off a little bit and maybe disconnect a little bit and maybe think, okay, maybe I like Instagram, but maybe Twitter makes me feel sad and mad at the world. So maybe I'm going to disconnect from that and try to be involved in what I'm doing in different ways. And so I think there's kind of a, you know, we live on autopilot mode so much of the time when we manage our attention, bouncing around between what's latest and loudest, but we never really take that step back to deliberately manage our attention, which I think is the key with all this stuff, when not all of it is created equal. A lot of it's noise.
You know, you just took away my ability to blame and point the blame at somebody and say, you know, I'm going to blame you for creating all these distractions, Facebook, or blame somebody who succumbs and is seduced by those things. But, you know, who is to blame? Because there is, I mean, I don't want to say it that way. That's kind of a silly way to say it. But there is something to the fact that we are wired this way, and someone has figured out we are wired this way and is taking advantage of that, is exploiting that opportunity. But so we can counteract that by simply recognizing it and stepping out of that space?
I think we can. And I think we need a certain level of awareness in the first place. And it's funny you mentioned whose fault it is, because I've never really thought about it like that. It's kind of everybody's fault. It's Facebook's fault for, you know, A-B testing everything to the point of insanity, where they realize that when they paint something with this shade of red, that people click through it 1% higher than another shade of red. It's our fault because we don't take control over our attention. But if we don't take control over our attention, I think somebody else will. And this is the point that that I realized is that, okay, you know, if I'm falling victim to this and everybody's falling victim to this, we really need a mindset shift with regard to our attention, where, and if there's one thing that came up in the research, you know, again and again and again, it's that the state of our attention determines the state of our lives. If we're distracted in each moment, these moments accumulate day by day, week by week, year by year, to create a life that's distracted. If we pay attention to what's meaningful and productive in the moment, you know, this is something else that I realized, that our attention isn't just about productivity. You know, it's about meaning as well. We can make a life that's more meaningful and productive. But I think it has to start with us, because our attention is so far, it's so often out of sync with what we actually want and what we're experiencing.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Chris Bailey, and his new book is called Hyperfocus: How to Be More Productive in a World of Distraction. And Chris, since I've had a very short-lived relationship with your book, it's been kind of liberating, I have to say. So it's like you gave me the permission to put my phone on airplane mode. And I'm telling you, because I wasn't going to, you know, have to be ashamed of myself for being distracted while I was reading your book, especially. I was going to hyper focus. So there it goes on airplane mode. I'm focusing, and, you know, somewhere you're talking about 90 minutes or, you know, an hour at a time. And it's like, well, let me see if I can do this. Because you say, you know, when we're working in front of a computer, on average, we work for about 40 seconds before we're distracted. That is just incredible. So I wasn't going to let that happen. And after my session, I turned my phone off airplane mode. And here come all the text messages that I missed in, you know, gee, just an hour. And I thought, wow, that would have disrupted me seven different times.
Yeah. And when we, that was actually one of the most alarming statistics that I encountered in this journey. And it was one that made me feel that I wasn't alone in this journey, too, that. And this study, by the way, it wasn't like, oh, we put a mouse in a maze and it switched directions every 40 seconds. This measured real people in a real office at Microsoft, in fact, and they measured the actual work they were doing on their computer. And it's worse when we have instant messaging open at the same time, apps like Slack and, you know, email and things like that. But in those cases, we switch every 35 seconds. And this is the state in which we live our life. So I think, you know, part of it is it seems luxurious to disconnect, but we need to. And you know, if for productivity reasons alone, when we rapidly switch from one thing to the next, to the next, our work takes around 50% longer than it would otherwise. So if you were reading that passage of the book, it would take you 50% longer if you didn't seek out something more novel and pleasurable and threatening in the first place, which might have derailed your productivity. That's another thing that I encountered is that when we switch our attention away completely from one thing to another, it takes us an average of 25 minutes to get back on track. It's different. The times are different, curiously, if a distraction is external versus internal. And you might think that 25 minutes seems a bit long, but think of when you wake up first thing in the morning. You know, if you're like me before writing this project is, you know, I pulled my phone out and I switched it off in airplane mode because I thought, okay, I'm going to defend my attention at night. But then I noticed that I got tagged in a Facebook picture. So I attended to that because who knows if it would have been good or bad. Then I went to Instagram and Twitter and the news. And before I knew it, 25 minutes have gone by. I'm still laying in bed. I'm switching between apps every 40 seconds. And the day kept going from there with that state of fragmented attention. And I think this is just further evidence that we need to reclaim it. You know, it's not our fault, but we need to step up.
As you go through that horrific rabbit hole of distraction, it kind of makes me feel sick to my stomach knowing that that's what that's what Tim, you know, probably our entire society does from time to
definitely
time,
Tim.
If not every single day. Yeah, definitely Tim.
Yeah, definitely Tim. Throw Tim under the bus so far that he could change the oil. But this isn't my quote. I forget who said this. But like, if the first thing we did in the morning was reach for a bottle of whiskey, we'd be an alcoholic. So what does it say that the first thing we do in the morning is reach for our phone and, you know, constantly have to release that dopamine in our brain where we're focusing on new and novel things every 40 seconds. It's the attention mechanisms in our brain that we need to get ahead of.
Chris, I have to ask you this. I think you're impersonating somebody. I think you're actually Eckhart Tolle, and you've wrapped yourself in a new book and a new angle, and you're coming at us as Chris Bailey with the message of being present in each moment and not letting those moments get away from us, and how to, you know, reframe focus and productivity by being present in the moment. And even your list of things to do, I can't help but look at it and go, oh, meditate to improve your memory. Huh. Well, thanks, Eckhart.
Yeah.
Invest in your happiness. Oh, well, there's another one. Yeah, no, this is, I mean, you know, the list of things you have here, and I just want to highlight one for Lynn. Consume some caffeine before starting a project.
Hey.
Caffeine provides an invaluable focus boost, Lynn. Lynn is very focused.
Here's to you.
How caffeinated are you right now?
Well, it's pretty early here in the morning, so each of us are working on our daily quota. But how about this list of things, Chris? You know, it's a really amazing, useful tips for improving productivity, and some of them might surprise people, but some of them wouldn't. One of my favorites is never attend a meeting that doesn't have an agenda, ever.
Yeah, well, a meeting without an agenda is a meeting without a purpose, and why would you do anything that doesn't have a purpose? And I feel this is the point in the interview in which I take off my Mission Impossible mask and reveal that the whole time I actually was Eckhart Tolle. But I think that's the point, that managing our attention, it involves being anchored to the moment. Because where our mind is at is so often out of sync with what we're actually doing. We're having a conversation, but part of our attention is on what we're going to be doing next, which compromises our productivity. We're having a meaningful conversation with somebody at a restaurant, and they run off to the washroom for a second, and we check our phone without reflecting on the meaning behind that experience in the first place. And so a lot of these, you know, the cover of the book, it's very bright, it's very red, it's vivid, but I think a lot of the book, the tactics in the book are about this mindfulness. It's noticing where our attention is at. How do we change where we direct our attention if we don't notice where our attention is at? It's really that simple. If you don't notice what your mind is full of and practice that mindfulness throughout the day, you know, how are you going to be more productive? And, you know, I think a big part of what I try to do is kind of bring these ideas down to the practical, tactical level. How do we relate differently to our smartphone? How do we email differently? How do we attend meetings and push back a little bit strategically on the ones that maybe don't have an agenda or a goal? Or, you know, how do you know if a meeting went well if you don't have a goal behind it? You know, question the recurring meetings on your calendar to think, okay, I attend that one every week, but I don't really have anything to contribute to it. Maybe I could politically maneuver my way out of it. And so it's in these ways and more that we can kind of reclaim our attention. It's one of those books where I think if you don't have time to read it, then it's for you because it's just that important.
Chris, I'm curious about, and I don't want to derail, well, actually, we're getting to the end of our allotted time, but, you know, this whole process that you've been focusing on productivity and then boiling it down to this book, which is a focus on it's being focused and intentional about your focus.
Yeah.
How long were you looking at sort of this broader concept of productivity? I know you did the research study, which was a year-long process, but even before mm-hmm. then, you were focused on productivity. And was it kind of from that traditional economics, you know, how do we improve worker productivity? And when we're at full employment, people have to be more productive and all that kind of blah, blah economic stuff? Or were you intrigued for other reasons?
It was very much that selfish personal reason. I wanted to do more, 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 faster, faster, faster. But the more time that goes on, the more I'm coming to the realization that it's not about productivity. Is not about doing more, 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 faster, faster, faster. It's about doing the right thing and doing those right things deliberately and with intention behind them. And I think that key. The key to productivity is intention. If we don't choose what we do before we do it, how do we become more productive? We're working on autopilot mode. We're focusing on what's latest and loudest instead of what's actually important in our lives and at our work. And that's kind of, and I think with that definition, productivity can transcend just the office. And I think that was kind of a big thing that struck me was, wow, this idea of intentionality, where we choose what we do before we do it, where we choose what we focus on before we focus on something. How often do we do that? You know, like if you gave yourself an honest score, would it be 10% of the time? Would it be 20, 30? How do we up that score of, because not all things are created equal. There are some things that we can focus on that give us more meaning. There are some things that we can do that make us more productive than anything else. But how do we manage our productivity and our attention so that we can get there? So it was very much that personal level, but it was also that the intention that lies at the heart of it that I think is so important.
I just wanted to mention, I just read this in Fast Company last night, that there was a study done that found 70% of managers currently have at least one high potential employee that they're considering letting go because of poor performance. And it all has to do with organizing, you know, productivity, their actions, you know, that sort of thing, even though they're very valuable employees. So really interesting there. And, you know, we only have a couple minutes left, so we must ask you, for those of our listeners who are listening going, oh, really, hyper-focus? How about scatter focus, which is part two of your book? And this is where you're creative. And I love how also you bring this focus on intention and purpose to being scattered in your focus.
Yeah, rapid fire answer because we're running out of time, I guess.
Yeah.
But I'm a lazy person. I'm one of the laziest people you'll ever meet, and not lazy in the traditional sense of, but like lazy in the sense where I love idle time to think deeply about things. I love knitting. Knitting is one of my favorite hobbies that I've taken up since writing this book, because it leads to so many creative insights. And the research on just letting our mind be when we do something that we love that doesn't require our full attention. Getting a massage is a good example. Taking a shower, going to the spa, whatever it might be. Our mind wanders to our goals and to the future 14 times as much when our mind is wandering versus when we're focused on something. So this is when we plan. This is when we come up with ideas. And this is when we rest so we can focus deeper later on. And so I think the two modes, the interplay between them is where we can become our best selves, you know, letting our mind wander, but also getting our mind to focus when we want to be productive.
Chris Bailey, hyper-focus. Thanks so much for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. And again, that was Chris Bailey. His book is called Hyper-Focus, How to Be More Productive in a World of Distraction. And really a great, very useful tool I have found. Did you find it was useful? I thought there were, I mean, it's all the stuff that we ought to already know, and we do know on some level, but bringing it to the forefront of your consciousness is an entirely different thing.
I like the way it's packaged. It's a great book, and it's very easy to access, and you're right. It is stuff that we probably already know, but seeing it presented this way makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. We want to thank both of our guests today, Dr. Robert Zembrowski. His new book is Rebuild, and Chris Bailey with Hyperfocus. Let's thank our underwriters.
Valley Behavioral Health, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Davidson Orthopedics, Park City Mountain, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, and Zions Bank.
And you've been listening to KPCW Park City. Stay tuned now for National Public Radio News from Washington.